But Kulingile remained unimpressed by the hints which Temeraire dropped, and continued both to eat and to grow. "Of course he will not outgrow Maximus," Temeraire murmured to Dorset interrogatively, when the second cow had vanished, and Kulingile was eyeing the rest of the herd with a sad, speculative gaze. Temeraire did not really see why Kulingile should outgrow him either, but one did not wish to sound self-centred, or as though one would mind any such thing. It did not signify, of course, if one were a celestial, even if Kulingile was also coming into a quite handsome pattern of golden scales as he grew.
"Very likely he will," Dorset said, writing in his logbook.
He had been making a record of everything which Kulingile ate, and doing a great deal of measuring with his knotted string, at least until Kulingile had grown so large that only his talons might so be measured in any reasonable amount of time. Dorset added,
"We will know he has begun to reach his growth when he ceases to be quite so rounded. That is when the body will have overtaken the air sacs, and so begin to approach the limit."
But it was now more than a week later, and Kulingile still had a tendency to roly-poly, and if he was not quite as long as Temeraire, it would have been a little difficult to say he was decidedly smaller, if one should compare their shadows on the ground. MacArthur was certainly very impressed by his appearance when he came up to the promontory that afternoon, presumably to speak with Lawrence, but Lawrence had gone down to the Allegiance to dine with Riley and Granby one final time before their departure, and so there was no one else to meet him. MacArthur paused at the edge of the hill and asked Temeraire,
"So this is the new one, I gather. Something prodigious, I see, for a few months out of the shell. He will have your measure if he goes on a little longer this way."
"I suppose, if one is only concerned with weight," Temeraire said, a little repressively.
"Ha ha," MacArthur said, although Temeraire saw nothing very funny in it. "And does he have a captain?"
"He is mine," Domaine said, belligerently, having already raised his head to listen from where he and Roland were sketching out the proposed plan of attack upon the serpents and arguing over its merits.
Domaine was inclined to dislike it only because Rankin had proposed it, and so was finding a fault where Roland had said impatiently,
"Yes, he is a scrub. What has that got to do with fighting? If Lawrence said to jump in the water and fight them, would you like to do it?"
MacArthur eyed Domaine more than a little doubtfully, and then said something to him which did not make any sense. It was a little like the aboriginal languages which Temeraire had now heard bits of, mixed together with a great deal of English peculiarly pronounced.
"What?" Domaine said, justly baffled. "He thinks you're one of their natives," Sifo said, without looking up from his book. "We are from Africa, and we aren't stupid either. You needn't talk like you are babbling to a child."
"Well, that is handy," MacArthur said. "It is a shame more of you blackfellows cannot speak better English."
"It is a shame you can't speak better Chinese, too," Sifo said, not quite under his breath,
to which MacArthur said,
"Why, I cannot say I would mind it these days,"
and laughed again, ha-ha, and said to Domaine,
"Now then, how did that come about? You are never an officer."
"I am, too," Domaine said defiantly. "Whatever Captain Rankin may have said, he wanted to have Kulingile killed when he was hatched, so..." He spat. "That for him, and anyone else who likes to deny me. I am happy to meet them any time they like."
"Well, for my part, you may keep your sword in its sheath," MacArthur said, "and I am happy enough to call you captain if the dragon does. There's the real sticking point of the business, after all. I suppose the other fellows are being sticklers over it," he added shrewdly,
and Domaine looked mulish.
"You will be sticking here with this big fellow, I gather. What do you mean to do, stick here in this covert?" MacArthur went on. "A little uncomfortable, with a grousing pack of envious fellows about. You might do better to go it your own way, after all, with your own piece of land, and raise cattle on your own."
Domaine took a low, startled breath. There was nothing more highly valued in his childhood society than cattle, at once survival and currency. Orphan and impoverished, he had risked his life willingly to become the possessor of a cow, which yet remained in some corner of his spirit a standard of wealth. MacArthur might as well have said that Domaine ought to dig up a chest all full of treasure, and pointed him in its direction.
"I might," he said, attempting to be a little cool about the matter, and sounding merely wary. "Well, keep it in mind," MacArthur said. "There is no need to make any hasty decisions, only you might think it over whether it would suit you."
He asked after Lawrence then, and hearing he was at dinner, touched his hat and went away, not without promising another pair of cattle.
"With a yearling beef for the littler fellow," he said, meaning Caesar, "and that way you don't need to squabble it with this Kulingile,
did you say? As though Temeraire would have squabbled anyway in some undignified manner. Give your captain my regards, he concluded, and so departed, leaving Domain to say to Roland in an undertone, It would suit me better than scraping to Rankin. As though you would anyway, Roland said, rolling her eyes. Don't be an ass. He probably wants to see if you can be persuaded to fetch and carry for him or something, like at a bargain price.
Do you think he might like something carried at not a bargain price, if he could not get better?
Temeraire inquired, though Roland abjured the idea scornfully, as beneath the dignity of an aviator to consider. Domain was of very like mind when Temeraire said to him privately afterwards,
But if he or some other person were prepared to pay in cows, no one could object, I find, to doing him some service.
There would be time yet to consider. At present, the question and MacArthur's visit both were driven quite from his mind, for the wind had shifted, not very strong, but enough to rattle the spars a little, and in the ideal quarter. There was a consultation going forward on the deck of the ship, which Temeraire could see in the fading light. The young officers on duty peering up and calling questions to the crow's nest. They were a little while at it, and resolved not too soon. Below in the street, the doors to the inn opened, where the men had gone to dine. Just as the ship fired away a blue light, and the small blue pennant rose up on the mast to summon all her officers aboard. Lawrence came up the hill slowly and rested his hand on Temeraire's side, as the ship's launch rowed back out, the guests from dinner crawling up the side one after another. The men were already at the two massive capstans, marching around, as the sails billowed out in sheets of rolling white.
"Goodbye!"
Iskierka called from the dragon deck, her voice carrying over the water.
"Goodbye! I will tell Granby to write you whenever anything interesting should happen."
Temeraire sighed a little and put his head down upon his forelegs, as the Allegiance began her slow and stately progress. The evanescing light orange-pink, and steam wreathing her foremast from Iskierka's spikes, spilling up the belled sails and trailing away. Shouts, calls, the bell rung at the quarter hour came distantly. The ship was moving towards night, away, and the curve of the land gradually concealed the hull, so that one saw only the sails gliding. A little longer, and then only the lantern gleam high up, if Temeraire sat upon his haunches and stretched his neck. Then even that faded to just the gleam of the stars coming out, and between one blink and another, Temeraire lost the track, and she was gone. The Allegiance was gone, the first he had ever sat upon the shore and watched her leave. The harbour looked strangely empty and smaller with her out of it, as though one could not quite imagine that any ship so large had been in that place, and all the other ships which had looked so small beside her now seemed ordinary in size and respectable.
"There is no reason she should not come back some day," Temeraire said to Lawrence. "Of course, after all, a ship may go anywhere it likes, and she was sent here once. They might like to send some other dragons, and oh, it would be so very tedious to be sailing another 8 months, as Iskierka is likely to do, if she is not sent to Brazil, that is,"
he finished, rather despondently. He was sure Iskierka would be sent to Brazil. It would be just the sort of thing which happened to Iskierka. It did not seem very fair that anyone so careless should have acquired heaps of treasure, and all the ship's stores of cattle to herself, and also have a great deal more fighting, and everything pleasant. But he was determined not to be dismal. He would not be a weight upon Lawrence, who had also been left behind to manage with Rankin, and this new governor. Temeraire had been forced, sadly, to reconsider his feelings towards Macquarie. Lawrence certainly thought better of him than of Bligh, and Temeraire would not quarrel on that point, but it seemed Macquarie was rather given to consulting Rankin and not Lawrence, and Lawrence had not been invited to several of the conferences to further discuss the plan of attack. Instead, Rankin would return to the covert after these were held and present the plan to the aviators in a very officious manner, and if Lawrence had a point to make or some question, Rankin would address him very pointedly as Mr. Lawrence, and the others as Lieutenant, such as Lieutenant Blinken. He only ever addressed the midwingmen so, as Mr. Peabody or Mr. Dawes, so it was all the ever more sharp.
"That scarcely concerns me," Lawrence said, when Temeraire had expressed his very great irritation. "You might as easily refuse to share with me any intelligence from the conferences at all, and try and put another man aboard with us to govern the course of events during the battle. He would be within his rights."
"As though I should allow any such thing," Temeraire said. "And I'm sure he knows it. He might fight the battle without me then, and I expect without Kulingile too."
Kulingile cracked open an eye at his name and asked drowsily, "Is it time to eat again yet?"
"No, but I imagine you have not long to wait. I passed a butchering on my way," Tharkey said, coming up the hill.
He shook Lawrence's hand. To Demarere's dismay, he had come to also take his leave.
"The master of the Minerva informs me he means to make port at Bombay," Tharkey said, "and I know the road from there to Istanbul."
He smiled a little, twistedly.
"Much of my intelligence may be a little old by the time I have got there, but I have promised to deliver it."
Temere did not see why Tharkey should have to go so far, only to deliver news, and particularly when he did not seem as though he wished to go very much.
"But if you must, you might come back," Temere said. "And if you see Bazaid and Shirazda, pray tell them that their egg hatched quite safely. I have often thought that I ought to send them word. It is not their fault, of course, that Iskirke is so very irritating."
"I think we must expect to regret you a longer time," Lawrence said. "There can be very little to call you back to this part of the world any time soon."
Tharkey paused, then said,
"We spoke some time ago of endeavours which might call you away from it, however. I would have opportunity to make enquiries, if you have decided."
Lawrence did not answer immediately. Then he said,
"No, thank you, Tenzing. I cannot see my way to it. I am very grateful."
Tharkey waved this away.
"Then I will hope some other occupation finds you. You do not seem likely to me to lie idle."
He drew out a handsomely embossed card from a case in his pocket.
"My direction is likely to be, as always, uncertain, but you may write me care of my lawyers. If they cannot find me, they will hold the letters until I have called for them."
He gave Lawrence the card. They clasped hands once more and agreed on dinner the following day, before Tharkey went down the slope away.
"I certainly hope that he is right," Temere said with a little sigh.
Privateering did seem to him a splendid occupation, and it was a great pity Lawrence felt it was not quite the thing. It did not seem to him that anything of interest should ever happen here, nor fair that everyone but himself and Lawrence should go. Tharkey and Lawrence were away at dinner the next afternoon when the gunfire erupted, late in the afternoon. Temere had just woken to enjoy the cooler hours and had been contemplating whether he might call it worth the effort to fly a little distance to the more shaded waterhole and have a cold drink. As the crack and whistle of musketry went off, Kulingile opened his eyes and sat up.
"Is it time to fight the serpents?" he inquired hopefully.
His voice had not grown lower, but a great deal more resonant in an odd echoing manner, so that when he spoke it seemed as though several people were talking at once, saying the very same thing. "Of course it is not time to fight the serpents," Caesar said, peering down the slope. "My captain would have come for me and my crew. There are men fighting one another. Perhaps it is duels."
"It is not duels," Temere said. "No one fights duels at night, and with dozens of people against one another. One fights them at dawn. I do not see why there should be so much disorder in this town, and why Lawrence must always be in the midst of it, somewhere I cannot see him. Oh, they are firing again!"
There were a great many men in uniforms in the street, struggling now against one another with bayonets and wrestling, their rifles held like staves and battering away. Temere rose and peered down the hill anxiously, looking to see if he could make Lawrence out anywhere at all in the melee, but his brown coat would have been difficult to see in better light than they had, so that Temere did not see him was no comfort. If he had seen Lawrence, he might at least have had the opportunity of snatching him away to safety.
"I am going to go down there," Temere said decisively. "No, Roland, I cannot wait. Plainly Lawrence might be anywhere, and perhaps they will stop if I should land among them. I will only knock over that low building, which is very rickety-looking anyway, and perhaps the one beside it."
"You are not to go anywhere," Rankin said, panting up the hill, in his heartlessly plain evening clothes and great disarray, with Blinken and his second lieutenant behind him. "Mr. Fellows, you will rig Caesar out at once. It is a rebellion. You are to remain here," he added to Temere. "Lawrence is in no danger whatsoever. They are advancing on the governor's mansion and nowhere near the inn where he was dining."
"As though I were likely to take your word for it," Temere said scornfully. "Or listen to you. I am not under your command, and if someone is rebelling, who is it and why?"
"That," Rankin snapped, "is none of your concern. If you do mean to go blundering in and likely crush Lawrence yourself in reckless abandon, by all means do so, but you will keep out of our way. Caesar, does all lie well? That breastband does not look secure to me, Mr. Fellows. You will see to it."
"'It is a little loose there over the shoulder as well,' Caesar reported, puffing out his chest tremendously. And then Domain said, "'I don't see why we should—' "'Ow!' Roland had kicked him soundly in the shin, and as he bent towards it, caught him by the ear, twisting it painfully. "'Don't be an ass,' she said. "'And don't you yowl at me either,' she added, when Kulingile had reared up his head in bristling protest. "'It is for his good and yours. "'Let go!' Domain hissed back at her. But she was managing to dance around him and keep hold, so he could not easily wrench loose without hurting himself worse. "'Why should we let him decide who is ruling the country and everyone in it?' "'We shouldn't,' she hissed. "'But you aren't the son of an earl with 20,000 a year and half the lords in his pocket. If you look a rebel, someone will just shoot you, you ass, and not bother with trial about it either. You haven't a scrap of influence. And anyway,' she added, "'if he hasn't any business deciding, you have less. You don't even know who it is rebelling or why, and I dare say they're all just drunk.'
"'They are certainly not drunk,' Temeraire said, "'for they have got off 3 volleys, and it is no joke to reload a gun even when one is sober. It was the greatest difficulty for our artillery company to manage it, with 7 men to a cannon, so it must be even more trouble for one person with a musket, it seems to me, and I do wish I knew who they were.'
"'It is the New South Wales Corps,' Lieutenant Forthing said, panting. He had dashed up the hill. "'Mr. Lawrence is coming, Temeraire. He says to tell you he is quite well, and you are not to come in search of him.'
"'Where is he, pray?'
Temeraire said, still a little wary. Lawrence, he knew, thought a little better of Forthing after their journey, but Temeraire did not see that he had done anything of particular value. He would much rather have had Ferris back, or perhaps his midwingman, Martin, except, of course, Martin had given them the cut direct after the trial. It was grown too dark to see, but there was a lantern coming up the hill, and then Caesar said, "'All lies well, Captain Rankin,' very satisfied with himself, and stood waiting while the company of officers began to go aboard with their rifles and their pistols, and as they mounted he added aside to Temeraire and Kulingile, in a tone of unpardonable condescension, "'Well, fellows, we will settle this in a trice and be back. Pray don't trouble yourselves over it.' "'I do not see why we do not get any fighting, and you do,' Kulingile said queryingly, which Temeraire felt was a remarkably appropriate question. "'I have been very sleepy, but no one can sleep when there are guns going, and if it is the New South Wales Corps, have they not been giving us those sheep and the cows?'
"'Well,' Temeraire said judiciously, "'so far as that goes, Governor Macquarie did provide us with some cattle.'
One ought, he felt, be scrupulously fair in such circumstances.
"'But he does mean to start a war with China, which no one would like. "'Lawrence,' he said, swinging his head around, "'I am so very relieved to see you. "'I had meant to go down, but Forthing came sooner. "'We are discussing whether we ought help Governor Macquarie or the Corps, who are rebelling again.'
"'Yes,' Lawrence said grimly. "'Roland, my glass.' The battle, if one might call it that, had gone all the distance to the Governor's mansion now, and seemed, so far as Temeraire could see it, to be quite reduced in scope. There was very little fighting, and the soldiers who had stood in the way now seemed to be walking with the rest, except for the small company of marines who had fled. There was singing going on, and a great many of the townspeople had come out with lanterns and also flagons and bottles. One could see the light shining on the glass as they drank and cheered, and pistols were shot off into the air. Lawrence closed the glass and gave it to Roland.
"'Caesar!' Rankin said. "'Put me up!'
"'Temeraire,' Lawrence said, "'you will not permit him to go aloft. If you please, sir,' he said to Rankin, "'the event has run past you. You will not turn your beast against a crowd of civilians. God knows there has been enough of that in this war. I will not see it done again.'
Rankin's face went very pale with anger, and his hand clenched upon the straps of his carabiners, which he held ready.
"'Mr. Lawrence, if you should dare interfere—'
"'I do,' Lawrence said flatly,
and whatever Rankin might have said foundered. There was no threat he could offer.
"'If you had the least ambition of pardon,' he said, after a stifled, furious struggle briefly contorted his narrow, aristocratic mouth, "'you may leave it aside forever. If you think the account I shall give of you will not suffice, Governor Macquarie will surely damn you as thoroughly.'
"'I have no doubt of it,' Lawrence said, and turned away. He did not care to give Rankin his face.